Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld. A world of never-ending happiness. You can always see the sun. Day or night. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one. Locked down, things be alright.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the My View Matters radio show. That's right, the one show where your view actually matters. We're broadcasting at 92.7 WXBH, of course, and live streaming across Blog Talk Radio. I tell you, it's going to be an interesting night. We've got a lot going on. I am awaiting my co-host, Mr. Ed Martin, to join us. He should be joining us here in just a few minutes. He's running a little bit late today. And I, of course, am your host, Ed Springsteen, every night, Monday through Friday at 7 o'clock. For those of you who want to call in tonight, 858-683-1326 is the national number. And on a local number here in Louisville, Kentucky, it's 502-805-0334. I tell you, there's a lot of things going on here in Louisville today. And, you know, we're talking about MSD, LMAS. You know, there's so many things we can get into tonight. I kind of want to start with LMAS, Louisville Metro Animal Services. And I tell you why. WHAS 11 has got a report out that about animals at Louisville Metro being killed by other animals. You know, this is one thing that nobody has been talking about, and I want to know why. You know, they're not protecting the safety of the animals while they're there at Louisville Metro Animal Services. And quite honestly, in my opinion, we had the same kind of problems at the Kentucky Humane Society. The Humane Society adopted pets out to me at Thanksgiving with distemper. You know, so those animals weren't taken care of correctly. These puppies were given to me. They had distemper. They were sick when they adopted them out. You know, so I don't really see much difference between the two of them. Now we talk about Metro Animal Services and the fact that, you know, animals are killing themselves. There's all kinds of documentation there where, you know, they're picking up a stray off the street, you know, a family dog that accidentally got out for whatever reason. They pick up the stray animal. They go to the – it ends up ultimately at Louisville Metro Animal Services. And then you've got other animals that attack it and kill it. But here's the interesting thing. You know, in most cases, the dogs are separated. They're separated by cages. There's a metal plate that slides down between the two cages. And quite frankly, they're apparently, these metal plates can be manipulated by bigger dogs. They can lift and lower them to allow them access to the other dog. So what's going on now is you're seeing a situation where, you know, bigger dogs are removing these metal plates and getting into the cage next door and attacking the smaller dogs and killing them. This has happened on frequent occasions at Louisville Metro Animal. So, you know, we want to get into that discussion tonight. Mr. Ed Martin, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. Just finished up a rugby practice, so it's all good.
Yeah. Are you sore?
I actually took my work boots off and decided to mix it up with the young kids.
Wait a minute, you took a work week off?
No, work boots.
Oh, okay. I thought you said work week. I was like, man.
They were sort of players, so the head coach said, "Why don't you hop in, Ed?" But I said, "Well, let me get these big red wings off, and I'll give it a go."
Yeah. Who are you coaching now?
Eastern High School. 12-0 Eastern High School.
Okay. You guys that don't know, Ed's a rugby player, even at his old age. And, you know, he spent some time donating his time to the community and helping coach at Eastern High School. So that's why he ran a little bit late on Thursday nights. I'm kind of giving a background on Louisville Metro Animal Services right now, Ed, because WHAS 11 carried a story today. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
I read it on our friend Jake Payne's page about that, where they don't drop the guillotine doors for whatever reason, lack of maintenance or whatever, and the pit bull comes in and mauls a little dog.
I see the interesting thing about this is, though, you know, they shut these metal doors to separate the two cages, but the bigger dogs can raise them up on their own. So my question is, why aren't these doors weighted in some way? you know, or some way to prevent that from happening. In addition, why would you put a small dog next to a pit bull? You know, a lot of these pit bulls, as we know, and I've got no problem with pit bulls, Rottweilers, or anything else, but every dog is a victim of their training, and a lot of pit bulls are trained to fight. And they use these smaller dogs like Chihuahuas and stuff, they use them as bait dogs to teach these pit bulls how to fight. So this is an owner problem, not an animal problem, but why would you not try to protect that animal when they're in your care like that, especially a stray that's a family pet? You know, you don't know where they come from.
Yeah, not only that, but, you know, it's just a simple mathematical equation. You know, put small dogs in a similar run with big dogs, or with other small dogs, you know. It's just a bad combination right there.
Yeah, and, you know, and here's another thing, too, because this isn't just a one-time situation. This is an ongoing thing. You know, Thomas Gilda was a guy who had a 13-year-old dog named Angel. Metro Animal Services came in, took his family dog away from him. He had this dog since they were a pup, a little bitty thing. Took this dog away from him and said that they were said that they had malnourished the dog. And, you know, so they took him away saying they were starving the dog, blah, 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 blah. But the bottom line is this. They weren't starving the dog. The dog was actually sick, you know, and losing weight accordingly because they'd been sick. Well, they took this dog, took it to the shelter, and, of course, this dog was killed by a pit bull. Well, what's fascinating here, Animal Services told him a pit bull killed his dog, and it had never happened before. What a lie. These things are going on constantly over and over and over. And I don't get why we still are not doing what we're supposed to be doing with Metro. I don't get it. I don't understand why Metro Animal Services is still getting away with the things they've gotten away with. This has been going on for years, you know?
Well, you know where I stand on it. I mean, as I said before, it's a pretty simple mission. You take the abused, neglected, or otherwise abandoned dogs, and you put them in your care and try to take care of them. It's not real complicated, you know. The dogs don't make demands on you and stuff. They simply want to be fed and give them a halfway clean place to live and don't hook them up with a known, you know, with a dog where there's a high probability of a fight.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, why do we continue allowing this? This all started, a lot of things came to light under the former administrator, Gilles Malloch. It didn't get any better under Wayne Szalinski, which nobody expected it to because Szalinski is Malloch part two. You know, now we've had two interim directors and we're still having the same problems. What's it going to take to get control of LMAS? That's my problem. I don't understand that. What do you think?
Well, you know, the only thing that ever seems to work with government is it's just got to keep dredging it up. This way, I think the biggest stories started. You know, they started in concert with a couple of the news stations, and the bloggers picked it up and wouldn't let it die. Credit to the blogosphere, and at that point. Keep the pressure up because these things keep getting out. They're simply going to have to deal with it. It's gone on for years. Lord knows how long it's gone on until it came to the light of day and stuff. And now that it's out, and it's a good thing. Every little screw up they come up with, they get burned on, and that's a good thing.
Well, it may be a good thing, but so far the only thing I've seen is their way of addressing this is to pay basically. I think it was up to. $30,000 or something more than that for a couple months worth of work from the Humane Society to come in and teach them how to do something better. The problem is the Humane Society is just as bad. They don't get all the publicity because they're not a public organization like the LMAS, but they're inherent with their own problems. They've adopted out sick animals. Mine died of distemper thanks to the Humane Society. You know, there's all kinds of different things here. So in my opinion, we're not doing anything. We're still continuing down the same road. And I've got a problem with that, and I don't know how we're going to fix that until we're willing to say, okay, go back to the beginning, put somebody in there, and see how it works out.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I've said before, they don't necessarily need somebody from the animal business. They need somebody from, you know, they can understand the simple mission statement and implement a plan to take care of it. And it is a fairly simple mission. It's take care of the animals.
Well, and that's exactly it, and that's the problem. They're not doing anything to take care of the animal at all. Okay, so we want to hear from you guys. Give us a call if you want. We can talk about LMAS. We're going to get into a few other things here in a couple of minutes. Call us at 502-805-0334 or on our national number at 858-683-1326. I want to know if any of you guys have actually adopted animals from Louisville Metro Animal Services or the Kentucky Humane Society, and what your experiences have been with both of those organizations, because this is ridiculous to me. We're not doing anything to make it any better. We're still having the same problems, and, you know, I want to find out what you guys think about that, so give us a call. You know, it's just totally amazing to me, Ed. It really is, because we're still continuing to have these kind of problems after all of this time. Now, I understood those problems under Jerry Abramson, because he really didn't care about anything but Jerry Abramson. Jills Mulock and all these other people were Jerry Abramson's cronies. Greg Fisher is taking some strides to try to improve things in some areas. Do what?
I'm just dropping off one of the
okay. You know, but Jerry Abramson was all about Jerry Abramson. We know this. Greg Fisher has done a pretty good job, I think, of starting the key word here, trying to get involved with some different things, you know, like MSD, for example. You know, he made a change on the board and things like that, so we're hoping to get ahead of the game there. But, you know, do we need to move quicker, you know, when we get situations like this, do we need to move quicker towards solutions? You know, we talked before about incremental steps.
As far as moving quicker, quote unquote, like I said, it comes down to a very clear mission statement. Make it a clearly understandable for all the employees, all the personnel, all the public, and everybody. A very simple, you know, it's like the no-kill policy, no kill. Very straightforward, you know, and just put it out there. I mean, the public is looking. So if they come up with a new plan. The public wants to see this or not. I'm sure they don't want to see their animals being abused, but that's it. It's very simple, very straightforward, and don't necessarily focus on the has to be somebody from the inside. Bring somebody from outside. I'm convinced they don't need to bring somebody in that has this type of experience. You need an executive who knows how to execute a business plan. Let the animal experts establish the business plan and the mission statement, and bring somebody in who understands, you know, really, in no uncertain terms, how to implement a business plan and put the quality control measures in. Because that's really what it comes down to: it's a business plan, a mission statement, and a quality control system that's easily understood by all parties involved.
Well,
it'll take care of itself. Simple.
Well, and for me, none of that's being done. It's not being done because of politics to this point. I'm hoping Greg Fisher does better with this, and I'm thinking he will. I really am. I've kind of been somewhat impressed with Greg Fisher trying to get involved in some of these things. I just hope that he finally realizes that he is the mayor of Louisville. He has a great opportunity here, and he's either going to jump on that opportunity and make it better, or he's going to do this incremental crap and make Jerry Abramson look good, at least until after the governor's election. And I honestly wonder if that ain't part of the situation, too. And, of course, you know, that's just my opinion, because my view matters. That's the way it is. But
well, I tell you, when it comes to Fisher, in my mind, the jury is still out, and I try to give him as much credit as possible. But as you're no stranger to pointing out, he inherited, you know, what was left over from Jerry, the mayor for life, Abramson. He inherited the bureaucracy, and, you know, he's going to have to go through, and he's going to have to root it out, as in the business office decisions, he's got his hands full, and you know that much I'm going to cut him slack on. He has his hands full.
Well, there's no doubt about that, and I think he's doing the best he can. But Fisher really doesn't have that much. He doesn't really have the qualifications right out of the gate. He's never served in office. He's not used to the government way of doing things. And believe it or not, there are two different ways of doing things. One is the way that everybody else has to do it, and another one is all the hoopla you have to go through when you run it through the government. But, you know, I'm hoping that some of the incremental steps that you always talk about, he's starting to implement. I am hoping, beyond hope, that he finally takes that as encouragement that he's on the right path and he does something about it. Because I'm like you, the jury's still out. For every step forward that I think Greg Fisher takes, he ends up taking one or two steps backwards. So the jury is still out, but I'm going to be curious to see how it all works out in the wash. In the meantime, folks, it's that time. Yes, it is. Time for break. You can reach us again, national number 858-683-1326. On the local line here in Louisville, Kentucky, 502-805-0334. Give us a call. We want to hear from you. We're going on break. We'll be right back with the My View Matters radio show right here on 92.7 WXBH.
Harry Truman
right, folks, welcome back once again to the 5U Matters Radio Show right here at 92.7 WXPH FM. I tell you, we're getting into some of the local things tonight. We're also going to move on a little bit later and get into some good little stuff like the GOP reps getting booed at town hall meetings over the budget. Arnold Schwarzenegger, former governor of California, decided to commute sentences for buddies of his. We'll get into all that in a few minutes, but I kind of want to switch gears a little bit and stay with local for a little bit. And the reason for that is Jerry Miller, Metro Council District 19, Councilman Jerry Miller, has been on the show a couple of times when he was a candidate. Jerry has promised to do some things and going for openness and transparency and things like that. And now Philip Bailey over at WFPL ran a story today about a council resolution seeking a stronger ethics for quasi-government agencies. What that basically means is, you know, people like MSD always hide behind this public-private quasi-government agency crap, which is one way they've gotten away with the junk that they've gotten away with, $2.6 billion in debt plus, you know, some new debt forthcoming. All the other things, there's been really no transparency, any accountability whatsoever. Greg Fisher fired, well, didn't fire, he requested the resignation of three board members from MSD just a couple of weeks ago and replaced them. Well, now we've got this new thing sponsored on the Metro Council seeking stronger ethics for all these public-private agencies and these quasi-government agencies. Jerry Miller has sponsored it, and I really like it. Basically what it says is it's a non-binding measure, which we know, but the agencies where the majority of board members are appointed by the mayor and have a budget over $100,000 have to be more open. It requests that those people, such as MSD and others like them, support the policies that provide financial information, including expenses, salaries, and contracts through an online database. What this does, it gives us the air of transparency. MSD board members that were asked to resign had a conflict of interest because they received contracts from MSD. Well, Jerry Miller is trying to close that door, and I think that's a great thing. Ed, what do you think? And let me guess.
Jerry Miller happened to be my council critter, so I'm doubly proud. As of course you said, you know, we've interviewed Jerry before, and a very bright guy. I mean, a very sharp guy. And being a freshman councilman, I tell you what, that's a big bite to take off for you know. But he is a competent, you know, in business and stuff. So he's got the street cred to pull it off. But you know, you like to see that when you get a freshman councilman in and he takes the steps like that. Now, granted. He's District 19, so part of that probably has to do with the fact that it's one of the more rural districts in the city. And, of course, you know, MSD comes out there, and MSD is doing a lot of work out in our part of town, too. So I'm sure it's a concern for him because a lot of his people are probably getting notices from MSD that they have to hook up to the sewers. And of course the parks, you know, the park, 21st Century Parks in his district is squaring off with MSD also. So, proud that he's my councilman, and it's a damn good move. I'm glad, you know, we've mentioned both him and Jim King together, knowing that they have the accounting experience and stuff like that, and that these are two guys who really would hope would step up and take charge and bring some of their business acumen to the table. It looks like they're both doing it, and that's a, you know what? A lot of times government doesn't give you a lot of opportunity to say good things, but those are two guys who are stepping up and bringing their private sector and their, you know, their street experience to the city council, which, you know, that, I don't see anything wrong with that. I hope he gets a taste of it and likes it and pushes for more.
Well, and I would agree with you. I'm liking the fact that, and it's really interesting to me because here's the parallel, you know. When we had Jerry Abramson in office, we didn't have anybody talking about these quasi-government agencies or any kind of transparency in any of this, including MSD. We had people out there working to try to get this accomplished. President Ray Pearson, operations manager of Stop It, come to mind. Stop Invisible Taxes, we've heard them on the show. You know, they've been out there working on that. I've been a part of that group working on it, trying to get to this transparency. But it was always fascinating because it was never done. So now that Jerry Abramson is gone, it's almost like that veil has disappeared, if that makes any sense. They've taken that veil of keeping stuff away and said, okay, let's see how far we can push it now. We've got a new way of doing business. And I like the direction it's headed. I really do.
Yeah. Well, and I think some of it's Jerry, but, you know, I'm going to make you blush for a second, but a lot of it is you and Ray Pearce and and any number of the bloggers out there. I mean, it's, as I've said before, you always say, well, how do we stop this? How do we stop this? Say, well, you just keep raising hell long enough, and sooner or later, either somebody else is going to pick up the story, or they're going to get tired of fighting to realize you're not going away. So, you know, I do think some may have to do with the change in the hierarchy in government, but also, kudos to you and Ray, and you know, toss Jake Payne in there too. These guys are, you step up, you put the pressure on, and eventually, you know, you just keep chipping away at it. Just like I always say, you know, if you need an elephant. How do you eat an elephant? You eat one bite at a time. You guys keep biting away at it, and after a while, you simply, it's, you know, I say, either somebody's going to pay attention, or the people that you keep nipping at are going to have a belly full of it and say, oh, hell with it. Just give some damn transparency and shut him up.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, I mean, and, you know, I'll sit here and take credit for part of my responsibility with this. Sure, thank you very much. I appreciate that. But the point for me is, though, that, you know, Jerry Abramson was able to really discard this stuff fairly easily. You didn't see reports in any of the media at all about some of these problems until they had no choice after myself, Jake Payne, Philip Bailey, other people in the blogosphere had really went out there and pushed this so far that it became a sensation because the media ignored it until they couldn't ignore it anymore. And, you know, so MSD, this is a great thing to me. I like the fact that Jerry Miller is leading the way on this. I really do, because that gives me a lot of, gives Jerry Miller a lot of credibility and much support to him from me. You know, Jerry, as you know, was running in the District 19 race against a friend of mine, Kevin Rumpel, in the primary. And, you know, I stayed out of that. I didn't take sides. We even had a debate on air that I stayed out of immediately, if you remember. The District 19 council members had a debate on air that I excused myself from because I knew it was an ethical problem. Ethical problem, Judy Green, get it? Anyway, but, you know, so I stayed out of that situation. And, you know, and Jerry has done a great job, in my opinion, so far. I'm very happy and thankful that he's doing as well as he is, because it was never a situation where Jerry was a bad guy. And I think he's doing fantastic. But here's the interesting thing for me, too, though. In the past, we would have seen Republicans and Democrats divided on this issue. Now that Abramson is gone, this resolution has bipartisan support, and it's going to go before the Accountability and Ethics Committee on Wednesday. But that bipartisan support is huge.
Again, you know, I know you're no fan of Jerry, but again, I'm going to say it, and that's when you always ask, how do we fix this? And the reason you're getting bipartisan support, in my opinion, is the fact that you've got goofballs like Judy Green out there, and you've got, you know, ethics, questions. Those two words seem to come together, you know, questionable ethics seem to come together so often that at any opportunity, anybody on the city council given the opportunity to support, you know, more transparency and forced to make take a stand between more ethics or less ethics enforcement, right now in this climate, they're simply going to have to vote yes. They may be pinching themselves under the table, but they have to vote yes. And we owe part of that to the shenanigans of the past, and current shenanigans. But again, we owe a lot of that to people like you and Jake Payne and Philip Bailey and even the Courier Journal's down on it here lately. And the new, even the TV, there's so much pressure right now. And there's so much coming to light about the lack of ethics and the questionable ethics in government right now, that simply is some to look. I want to put up a book for you know, stronger ethics, and, you know, an ethics statement or something. No, in this climate, nobody can vote against it, because if you do, then you just
you're gonna look like a fool.
Investigation on your own dumb self. So
you're gonna look like a fool if you do. That's absolutely right, folks. 502-805-0334 and national 858-683-1326. Give us a call. I'm kind of curious what you guys think about, you know, the ethics and everything else. Are we doing a good job holding people accountable, you know, in metro government or beyond? These quasi-government agencies like the public-private stuff, MSD, things like that. I want to know what you think, because, you know, MSD bills continue going up. You know, we've got this major debt that they're sitting on right now, you know, and I'm curious about something, too. How much money does the city actually get from utilities, you know, in a form of, like, franchise fees? This is given to me through an IM. And by the way, you can IM me at My View Matters on AOL. So if you got anything you want to say there, we'll see what we can, okay? But, you know, I'm curious of what you guys think about that, because what are they getting in franchise fees from MSD? We know, based on reports, and based on the financial data analysis and stuff, that, you know, MSD spends a lot of money on city projects. They really do. Millions of dollars that they spend on city projects that I think that the city should be responsible for, and it's what we pay taxes for. MSD is doing that. How much of that comes back to us in the way of rate increases? I see how I like that tax rate thing? Rate increases, okay? How much of that is passed on to us? We do have a $22 million budget shortfall this year that we have to cover. How much of that's going to come through these so-called rate increases through MSD and the money channeling back? It's a very interesting thing that this listener has sent me in an IM, and I think it's worth talking about. I'm going to grab a quick phone call real quick, folks. My View Matters Radio. Hello? Caller? Well, I guess they're not there.
Come on, caller. Don't be shy.
I guess they're not there. Okay. Well, we tried. I guess they're not there. We're going to try this again, see if we can get them. Caller, are you with us? Hello? One more try here.
Oh, you know, he said
he's still
Hello?
Hello?
Are you with us?
Just listening.
Okay. I don't know why they're calling the show to listen. Okay. It's all good. But anyway, we'll see what's happening here. But the bottom line is, you know, we've got a lot of things here. We've got a budget shortfall. MSD does a lot of rate increases, and a lot of that money doesn't go towards MSD things. It goes towards City of Louisville things that we actually pay taxes for. So it's like we're getting double charged to get anything done, and that's how we hide a lot of the so-called invisible taxes that the Stopping Group is about. So I'm kind of curious about those things. I want to take care of that, and I want to see what everybody else thinks about this. 502-805-0334 or 858-683-1326. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to My View Matters Radio here at 92.7 FM WXBH.
I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
They mix it up with lies and make it all taste good. Yes, they do. It's fascinating to me every time I hear that song, The Government Can by comedian Tim Hawkins. You can get a hold of that at timhawkins.net. It's a pretty good song. There's all kinds of things going on. I tell you what, man, I kind of want to switch gears and get into a little bit of national. As we know, we spent some time talking about LMAS and MSD this morning or tonight, and we've got a lot of things going on a national level as well. For one thing, the budget. You know, we've still got a budget crisis, regardless of what anybody thinks. You know, we didn't pass anything that's going to fix America. And it's interesting because now that we've supposedly done our job in Congress, the GOP reps are going around doing the town hall meetings on the budget. You know, Obama and his Democratic reps went around doing these town hall meetings on Obamacare. And John Yarmuth here locally, 3rd District rep, John Yarmuth, you know, was going to him. And all these Democratic reps were getting booed on Obamacare. Well, it's interesting because now the GOP is kind of taking control of the budget, and the GOP is going around. But guess what? People are booing them. They're sick of hearing the lies and deception. So I find that very fascinating because now they're getting a taste of their own medicine. Is this really going to get anything done? What do you guys think? 502-805-0334. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I've yet to read up on it because my computer's still down at my house, and I try not to get too preoccupied at work reading up on some political stuff. But, excuse me, I'm curious as to whether they're getting booed because people think they didn't do enough or whether they're doing too much. But, you know, I enjoy it nonetheless because you know they have. I think it's interesting that the GOP came in and they were so sure of where they were and they won the election and they had all the momentum and John Boehner cried so he was going to be the speaker and you know, you get in. And as I've said before, you know, the biggest problem with politics is the actual elections that we have and the people the archetypical letting your mouth overload your butt. And they went out and they talked balanced budget amendments. They went out and talked a big, tough talk. And, you know, when the people vote for you, when you say you're going to do all these wonders and you don't, then you run a very real risk of getting booed by those people. If you go in and, as I've always said, you forget that, you might have got elected with 51% on 49 and you basically spit on the 49, you know what? They're going to show up and boo you too.
Right.
So, I mean, I've always said it's just this acrimonious political climate when we have elections. It sets the stage for this kind of garbage. And it's a shame that they couldn't, you know, that even during an election that they couldn't have a little civility, stop calling each other socialist or wanting to starve babies to the way
right.
they could actually get to Washington and not have to break their promises or you know, not have to overstep or go off the deep end because of something you said on the campaign trail.
Well, and that's true, but, you know, here's the thing, too. I'm reading a story off the Huffington Post. But it's really fascinating because, you know, they're talking about, and for one thing, the budget plan is called the Ryan Plan, all right, the Ryan budget. It's named after the House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan. But, you know, Representative Dole out of Illinois, he's Republican representative out of Illinois. You know, he goes out there and votes for this plan and everything else, goes back to Buffalo Grove, you know, and sits in this town hall meeting. And he couldn't even get to the end of his presentation before everybody started asking questions about the budget, which was fair enough. But it was interesting because audience members were telling Dole that they don't believe chopping 10 points off the highest corporate tax rate will create jobs. And even some of the people in the audience who identified themselves as business owners and accountants said that their corporate income tax rate is already lower than the rates proposed in the Ryan plan. You know, and they started pointing out facts that big businesses such as GE they pay almost no taxes, even though they get billions of dollars in profits. I think that's a big paradox that people are going to have a problem overcoming, and I kind of agree with that sentiment. How about you?
Well, as I describe myself, whenever given the opportunity, I'm an anti-corporatist libertarian. It's crony capitalism. I'm very pleased with the fact that Paul Ryan brought the plan out. It's shot full of holes. I mean, it's got just as much misleading information in it as anything brought up by the other side. Where am I going with that?
Well,
I mean,
we're also talking though.
Go
ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and the thing is the projections in the plan, they push some things too hard. They make some really, really far-fetched assumptions on it. And I think it's great that people are looking at it saying, you know, it's okay. You know, we're glad you're talking about it. But like you said, small business owners, they stand up and they'll tell you what they, you know, and God bless the Internet and Al Gore, right? Because people know what the effective they know what the effective corporate tax rate is. They know what the effective income tax rate is for the the top 1%, 5%. I mean, search whatever you want.
That's true,
I think people are getting wise to it. I think the average, and upper average America is looking at it, and they're not buying this Republican line of crap anymore. Where they say, you don't want to tax the upper 1% because, you know, if you make that kind of money, it's like, okay,
right.
Now that people are getting realistic at the end, okay, you're saying we shouldn't tax them just in the event that someday that might be me, you know?
Well, a lot of it, you mentioned the Internet, and a lot of this really has to do with the fact that information is so readily available now. You know, these guys have spent a lifetime in politics passing out disinformation to people, trying to convince us that their way is the right way when we know better. It's all about padding their own pockets. And now that we have the Internet, now that we're starting to get openness and transparency laws, and we can start doing research, we're finding out that the American people are pretty damn smart, aren't they? They're able to go find this information. It's no longer a situation where they can tell us what we want to hear.
I'm guarantee you some of these people at these things that are booing them and making them look bad, they're probably sitting there with their little print offs from whatever article they read it, you know, wherever they read it, whether it was Business Insider or the Huffington Post or the Cato. You know, the Cato has just been ripping the Republican plan. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's a great thing because, you know, it represents an informed public, and I think if anybody's going to sit there and cheer, either the Democrats or the Republicans, and just take what they're offering, you know what? You've got to be misinformed because both the parties, we've always say, a pox on both their houses. You know, no single party got us into this mess. No single party's going to get us out of this mess. And if you believe either one more than any further than you can throw them, then you're misinformed or uninformed.
And you're absolutely right. And one of the biggest problems with this plan, apparently, and a lot of Republicans are getting angry about this, you know, Medicare has always been considered to be the Democrat thing, you know, their problem. But Republicans are getting angry about it, too. Lou Barletta, representative out of Pennsylvania, you know, went to his town hall meeting and told everybody, you know, basically go ahead and talk to us, get things off your chest, let's go through this presentation. He starts a slide projected presentation about the Medicare changes that are part of this Ryan budget, all right? And a woman raised her hand and said, excuse me, I'd like to get something off my chest. You seem to think that because I'm not affected, I won't care if my niece, my grandson, my child is affected. I do care. What you're doing with this Ryan budget is you're taking Medicare and changing it from a guaranteed health care system to one that's a voucher system where you throw seniors on the mercy of for-profit insurance companies. That's a pretty strong statement.
That's an informed citizen. I want to give her a hug wherever she is.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. And they've also got another one in here, too, you know, about Linda Chrisman. She was here, you know, and her comments were, you said nothing in the campaign about changing Medicare, but now you voted for a plan that will destroy Medicare. Now, this is the president of the Carbon County Democrats for Change. We got to kind of put that out there. But, you know, at the same time, there's a lot of Republicans and a lot of people going to these town hall meetings that feel like this voucher program will destroy Medicare. And it's interesting because Barletta basically says, I won't destroy Medicare. Medicare is going to be destroyed by itself. And, of course, the last sentence in this quote says, then it got ugly. You think? You know.
You know what? That is a real, somewhat truthful statement.
Well, it really
is. You know, Medicare is on the ropes. But you know, I don't think private, you know, putting it, you know, filtering it through a for-profit organization, you know, go examine how much health insurance companies gave the Republicans, but I don't think that's the answer either. But, you know, the thing that gets me, and the one that I read a lot of economics pages and stuff, is that the Ryan plan makes this assumption, well, it's going to be all better after we do this, and we're projecting a 2.8% unemployment rate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at that and say, you know what? If we had 2.8% unemployment, all our problems are solved anyway, because all that stimulus money is not going to be necessary. All that extended unemployment benefit money is not going to be necessary, and the tax receipts are going to be up. So, you know, everybody's looked at it and says, 2.8%? What are you talking about? All right, we're supposed to be smart. We
they're smoking that industrial hemp.
I'm telling you, I don't know where all these jobs are coming from, and I'm sure the business owners are looking at that going, you know, 2.8%, yeah, we can hear what the next statement is. We need businesses to hire. I'm sure that's, you know, the business owners are like looking at it going, 2.8%. Yeah. It's like, you know, come on, guys, give us a fair shake. Tell us it's tough. And once again, get together and compromise. And next time you run an election, don't promise us the moon. Just be reasonable. Just tell us what you can do. You know, we know we're in a deep hole. We're as informed as we've ever been. Just shoot straight with us.
Well, that's it. You know, and there's some interesting thing. Charlie Bass, you know, Republican representative out of New Hampshire, you know, he's at his town hall meeting talking about these things. And every question that he had, at least the first five or six, was about his vote for the Ryan budget. You know, and a lot of people were just asking questions of him and stuff like that. But they also had a lot of swing voters there as well. There's two independents that are specifically mentioned in here, and Eric Spitzbarth and his wife, Diane Loomis, both independents. You know, Spitzbarth voted for John McCain in 2008, and Loomis voted for Obama. So you've got a contrast here within the family dynamic, right? But they pay $1,700 a month in health care premiums, all right? If health care reform had included an early buy-in for those that are 60-plus in a Medicare, they said that they would go ahead and support Obamacare. But now neither one of them like the health care reform, and they don't like Ryan's budget. You know, Spitzbarth is saying that he thinks Washington should go green and recycle all of the waste because the system is broken and he's fed up with both parties. I think that's a fair assessment. I think most people are fed up with both parties. You know, so these are things that we've really got to, you know, and I think ultimately what it boils down to is this. It doesn't matter what side of the equation you're on, that people are getting sick of both parties. The Democrats are trying to push Obamacare. The Republicans are trying to push Medicare vouchers and big business tax breaks. And people are fed up with it. We know we've got to have some services. That's not the issue. The issue is how do we pay for it? And those that have aren't paying their fair share. And those that have not are paying more than their fair share. Why is it these two sides can't seem to find a middle ground and come together and rectify that? That makes no sense to me.
Well, there's no money in that. There's no money in getting along, and that's the biggest problem with politics. Always, it has, you know, whether it's abortion, budget, government-sponsored health care, or private health care, they've all got their. Nobody wants their ox gored, and the other, you know, and nobody's willing to give in much, you know, enough. And of course, when they get on the campaign trail, they've got to polarize their bases so that they can count on that solid vote, and then they reach in for that. They try to find that moderate. The swing voters and get in, and it's all about, that's the problem. It's all about getting elected. It's not about getting along, you know, and we all get along. Most Democrats and Republicans I know have no trouble getting along with them, but when it comes down to the party, the money, the special interest money, the cronyism, you know, if you really think the major parties, especially in Washington, have your best interest at heart, you know, as Judy Carroll said, you know, you maybe need to go to a different country because you are sorely, sorely mistaken.
Well, and that's a big issue. I agree. You know, I tell you, we're going to take our last break of the night real quick. When we get back, we'll get into a few more things. But I want to play one of my favorites, man, because this is where I think most of these government people ought to be.
I knew it.
Number 3, you're the cutest jailbird I ever did see.
Wow. Okay, we're back. I guess that song was a lot slower than I thought, or a lot quicker than I thought. Anyway, we're back at WXBH 92.7 FM with the My View Matters radio show, hosted by Ed Springsteen and Ed Martin. And I tell you, we were going into break, and we were talking a lot about the different things going on. You know, we're getting sick of these parties kind of looking out after themselves, and it's really been a pain in the butt for all of us. So, you know, one example, I'm going to mention this real quick. I don't expect to get many comments on this, but I'm going to mention it real quick. Former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. You remember him, right, Ed?
Arnold, yeah.
Arnold, yeah, that's it. You know, well, he actually admitted he was coming under fire because he reduced a guy named Esteban Nunez's sentence from 16 years to 7 years on the last day before he left office, all right? Nunez is the son of the former state assembly speaker, Fabian Nunez, and he had pleaded guilty in a 2008 stabbing death of a San Diego college student named Luis Santos. Well, it's logical to me that this guy would serve his time. You know, if you're complicit in a murder, I don't care who you are, I don't think 16 years is enough. Well, in this case, because Fabian Nunez, all right, had kind of been an ally on Schwarzenegger, even though he was a Democrat, he'd kind of been an ally, you know, helping him out and things like that when he was a governor. You know, he decided to do him a favor and cut that sentence down to 7 years. The problem is that isn't bad enough. Then he goes out and tells the whole world that he was just helping a friend when he commuted the sentence. Now, where have we heard this before?
I'm telling you, go on. I know you got something in mind.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, every single person leaves office, they put out these mass pardons or they do these commutation sentences. If they've got any balls, they should be doing this stuff when they get to office, not on the day before they leave where nothing can be done about it. They don't have to suffer any backlash. That's my problem. I think if you're going to be put in this position, you're going to have the power to do this, then these are decisions that must be made long before you ever leave office. Do it in the middle of a re-election year. That would be fine.
You should at least have to back it up 90 days. You know, your right to commutation should expire 90 days before the end of your term. So at least you got to catch some grief for it.
Something, yeah. I mean, Bill Clinton did all this stuff. Remember, Clinton did this. Bush did it. I mean, they all do it. They commute these sentences. They go ahead and do all of these pardons and everything else. But here's a guy who admitted guilt in a 2008 stabbing death. He admitted killing somebody, only got 16 years, so he should have counted his blessings with that to begin with. But Schwarzenegger says, well, I'm going to help this friend of mine, and I'm going to drop it down to 7 years. That way it looks like he's doing something, but he'll be out a lot sooner. You know, this is nuts to me. This is nuts to me.
Yeah,
and
of course,
this is nuts.
I could be wrong. I could be wrong, and I don't follow the law in California because obviously I don't live there. But, you know, it's amazing. He commutes this guy's sentence for killing someone with a knife, you know, good and up close
right.
and personal, too.
Right.
How many guys are sitting in California prisons because they got caught three strikes with a dime bag?
You're absolutely right.
And have no hope of getting out. And they were just marijuana. Yeah. Nonviolent offenses, three felonies. They'll never see the outside again. But the guy who sticks a knife in somebody, you know, up close and personal, obviously a child of privilege since his father was well-connected politically. Guy's just vicious. I mean, he wasn't fighting for survival. He's just a vicious, probably a sociopathic, narcissistic kind of guy. You know, he did it, and now he's going to walk. And,
let's go to the falls.
What's the human life word?
Well, let's
apparently
go to the falls. Let's see what's
human life. Yeah.
Yeah, let's see what's happening on the falls, because I agree with where you're going with this. We'll finish this in a second. Caller, are you with us? Hello? Hello, are you with us?
Wow, this is...
Well, that's strange. Well, that's not a kink.
Yeah,
that's just people not talking. But anyway, you know, so I think you're right with where you're going with this because, you know, we've got this three strikes and you're outlaws. You know, if you get caught with a dime bag of marijuana, you're doing nothing but, you know, going home and smoking a joint, watching a movie. You know, that's your business. But, you know, we're going to put you in jail for life, and we're going to let a guy who says, yeah, I stabbed him to death, so what, get away with 7 years, because Schwarzenegger says so. And what's interesting thing here is Schwarzenegger's official reasoning was that the sentence was excessive because the guy had no prior criminal record, and they didn't prove that he was the one who actually inflicted the fatal wound. Now, this guy stabbed two other people. Well, he stabbed two other people during the fight. He stabbed a guy that got killed multiple times. So, you know, I don't care if he wasn't the one that stabbed him in the heart, but if he stabbed him in the liver, who cares? It's still on the fist. The guy died. Okay? So it's nuts to me. It's nuts to me. And then, of course, you know, so he does all this, says that he knew this guy good, that he knew this kid good, and he felt good about his decision, and that he acted because of his working relationship with the guy's dad, a Democrat who frequently cooperated with the Republican governor. Now, I mean, come on. And, you know, and then he's got the brass cojones to say, when Newsweek is questioning why he did it, the brass cojones to say, well, hello, I mean, of course you help a friend. You help a friend whose son is a murderer. You help your son. You help your son's friend who's a murderer. Man, I tell you what. I wish I knew somebody that good.
How do you explain this? How do you explain this to the family of the deceased? You know, or the wounded? And it's like, well, there you go. He said it was the first offense. You know, so what a way to read into that. If the guy would have had two previous dime bag busts, or you know, got caught driving under the influence or something, if he'd have done something like that, if he had a couple other strikes for even nonviolent things, so he'd be in for life. But because he never got caught doing anything else,
That's the thing to me. That's the thing. But you don't just go out and randomly stab somebody, you know, in a situation like that. This guy obviously has some kind of other problems.
Not your first time out.
No, it's not. You know, it's his first time he got caught. And that's the thing for me. And interestingly enough, you bring up the family, and the family is the ones that are fighting this right now. And they say that Schwarzenegger violated several provisions of Prop 9. And Prop 9, for those who don't know, in California, it's a victim's rights amendment that California approved in November 2008. It's called Marcy's Law, all right? And that requires that victims have to receive notice and have a chance to be heard before sentences are reduced, and that their safety is considered in any decision. So basically, the victims can expect to have criminals punished by the sentence imposed by the court. Well, the family isn't arguing that Schwarzenegger doesn't have the constitutional power to pardon criminals. He does. You know, he can commute them and he can grant clemency, you know. But it argues that Nunes' sentence should be reinstated because Schwarzenegger failed to properly follow the Prop 9. And, you know, I think they're right. I think they're right. You know, you can't sit here and help a friend.
Yeah, I mean, that's your rationale. It's a friend, it's his first offense. And like you say, I can get into a whole, you know, of course, me being a libertarian and you know, trying to look towards nonviolent drug offenses and stuff like that. This is, you know, in contrast, like you say, have a couple streaks of bad luck, get nailed a couple times with, you know, not even hurting other people in many cases, and you're toast. But, yeah, kill somebody, stab a couple other people while you're at it. You're politically connected. There you have it. You know, you hear the term political class. Well, there's us and there's the political class, and it's much clearer than this.
And none of that is American at all. The political class is nobody above the citizens that they represent, and that's the problem for me. You know what? I wanted to get into this abortion story tonight. Oklahoma is doing a great thing, but we're not going to have time to do that. But Oklahoma has just signed an abortion bill. Maybe we'll talk about this tomorrow night at 7. But they just signed an abortion bill into law by Governor Mary Fallon. And basically it says that it's going to be a felony for doctors to perform an abortion after a woman reaches 20 weeks of pregnancy. You know, that's a very interesting law. I kind of agree with it. I'm pro-life, so I've got to admit that straight up. But we'll get into that. I want to get into that tomorrow night just a little bit, because I think that's going to be a conversation that's going to take longer than the 2 minutes that we've got left on the show. Additionally, you know, we're going to get into a couple of local things, too. Secretary of State candidate, this was just posted on the Courier-Journal, sent to us through an alert listener, but Democratic Secretary of State candidate Allison Lundgren Grimes, you know, got the endorsement of Attorney General Jack Conway. So we're going to talk about that tomorrow night. Mongiardo actually supported Grimes in the beginning, back in January. And Dan Mongiardo, of course, is the one who ran against Jack Conway in the last election. You know, Stumbo has talked about Grimes being the most dynamic candidate in 25 to 30 years. These kind of things are coming out of Courier. We're going to get into this a little bit tomorrow night as well. You know, the reason this is such an interesting story is Jerry Lundgren is nothing but a political insider hack. He's always been a political insider hack. You know, so he's opened up all these doors for his daughter, Allison Lundgren Grimes, all right? And the exception to this whole rule is Steve Beshear. Steve Beshear chose somebody else to fill the unexpired term of Trey Grayson for Secretary of State, and Steve Beshear is backing somebody else in this, the top Democrat in the state, I guess, and he's backing another person because he doesn't like Jerry Lundgren. They've been warring since the 70s. They can't stand each other. And there's a lot of background information on that we'll bring to light tomorrow night as well so people understand that situation. But these are stories we're going to get. Yeah, you know me. You know me. We're going to get into these stories tomorrow night. You know, short of that, I'm trying to think of what else we're going to get into tomorrow night. There was something else I wanted to mention to you guys, and quite honestly, I'm an idiot. I just forgot. I know what we'll talk about. Death Row. We've got an inmate on death row who's trying to fight for the right to donate his organs after execution. Now, you would think that would be a no-brainer, except in this particular case, there's a three-drug lethal injection process in Oregon that you use for the death penalty cases, you know, and you can't use the organs if you use this. So this guy that's on death row finally admitted his guilt after denying it forever, finally admitted his guilt, decided he wants to donate his organs to give something back to society. And, you know, all he's doing is basically arguing for a one-drug approach. There's a one-drug solution that can be used to kill him and so that he can donate his organs. So this is going to be an interesting story for tomorrow night as well. But in the meantime, man, we're going to get into those tomorrow night. For now, that's a wrap. That's
a wrap.
Yes, sir, it is. We are out of time. I can't believe it myself.
Okay, hey, next time, people, when you call, we don't bite. You can go on, you can speak. It's okay.
I hear you, man. That's right. We don't bite. That's why the show is called My View Matters. You don't have to agree with us, and I don't have to agree with you. But we make changes, and we make positive results by engaging in the discussion. You know, I'm not out to change your mind. You're not out to change mine. But I certainly have the right to tell you what I think, and I respect that right in you. All right? That's it. We're out of time. Ed, we'll see you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, here at My View Matters Radio, 92.7 WXBH. Have a great night, folks.
Down on it. You too, bud.
All right.